Welcome to The Cap, where we are here to speak with college reps and other professionals in the field of college admissions to help answer all your questions and guide you through every step of the process. So if you're serious about college admissions, you've come to the right place. Are you ready? Let's talk about it. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Durante.
Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and I am here to introduce you to college admissions representatives and other professionals in the field of college admissions. Our purpose is to serve you, the students and parents, so that you may gain insight straight from the people who ultimately make the decisions. Regardless of whether you will apply to a particular school being highlighted, you should listen to all of the episodes, as each guest will give you tremendous insight and advice on every aspect of the college admissions process, prompting you to come up with your own follow-up questions for when you visit campus or meet with a college admissions representative yourself. Lastly, if you have any questions you'd like me to cover on future episodes or any comments you'd like to share, please email me at collegeadmissionstalk@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit our website at www.collegeadmissionstalk.com. So are you ready? Let's talk about it. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today Emily Almas, who's the Director of Admissions at Bowdoin College. Emily, thank you so much for being here today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
It is our honor and pleasure. So, Emily, let's start by me asking you, what is it about Bowdoin College that makes it so appealing for so many students to want to apply and ultimately attend?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think Bowdoin is a place that attracts students who are really excited about the idea of being part of this community of about nearly 2,000 students from all over the country, all over the world. They come here to Brunswick, Maine, and really take advantage of the natural resources around them, of small classes with great faculty who are invested in the work they do, and all of us coming together thinking about the common good, sort of the bigger picture. How do we have an impact on the world? Bowdoin students go on to careers in all sorts of different areas and disciplines, and I think our liberal arts education prepare students really well for that. Our students come to Bowdoin because the community is kind, it's welcoming, it's curious, it's excited about the world. And I think our students and our alumni go on to really consider, how do they have an impact? What is the way that they're going to, either in their career and their life outside of work, whatever it may be, do something that improves the lives of others? That's something we take very seriously in the work that we do. So the experience is great. The location is amazing. We're just a few miles from the coast of Maine, and so many different opportunities as a result of that. It's a great place to be. Life on campus is very happening. There's always something going on, and we can get a little bit into that more in this conversation. But I think there's a lot that Bowdoin offers students, and that welcoming, kind, thoughtful community is something that really anchors all of that.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the kind, welcoming, and thoughtful community, Emily, because I read a statistic that 98% of your students return for a second year. So your retention rate is 98%. I believe the national average is 69%. So that's just an astonishing number and a testament to the great work that you do in admissions to get the right people, the right students on your campus, but also all the great work that you do to keep them happy once they're there. So what is the secret, Emily, to keeping your students happy and wanting to return year after year?
Yeah, I think there are a few pieces to that. One, really going back to that community I mentioned, we're a place that's collaborative, that's cooperative, and people really feel part of that community. So I think that absolutely plays a role in retention as well. I think the student experience is one where we as a staff, as faculty, spend a lot of time and put a lot of resources. We're very privileged to have the financial resources to do this, into thinking, how can we support students in the best possible ways. So whether it is our great advising for first-year students, our programs as part of orientation, all first-year students participate in trips, orientation trips before the beginning of the school year. A little fun fact, they did some math a few years ago, and there's something like 800 Snickers bars consumed on those orientation trips. But there's sort of a range of different ways we are very intentional in building that community. And then students, I think, find the opportunities here that are such that they can expand what they are imagining their college experience might be like. As a student at Bowdoin, you don't have to declare a major. You can't even declare a major until your second year. So there's lots of room. You'll work closely with an advisor and faculty to explore the curriculum and figure out what your academic journey here is like. I think some other things also are a piece of that. One is our financial aid policy, our student aid. So we meet the full calculated or demonstrated need of all incoming first-year students. We do that with grant aid. So we haven't put loans in our financial aid award for a few decades now, I think since 2008. And accessibility in multiple fronts, but particularly financial access to the college is something that we spend a lot of time thinking about. And then there are little things, right? Things like the food. The food is great. Not big on rankings, but if you look up best college food, you'll probably see Bowdoin's name out there somewhere. But what I think food represents is an opportunity for us to come together in community, spend time eating meals, for example, talking with one another, getting to know one another. Were you to visit one of our dining halls, you'd see students from all different class years, all different backgrounds, majors, and interests truly sitting together, enjoying a meal, literally and figuratively breaking bread. And so I think the community aspect comes through in all parts of the experience here.
Well, that's a terrific overview. True liberal arts education.
That's
true. A community that is second to none with 98% retention rate, meeting financial need, which is key for so many students and their families. And of course, who doesn't like great food? So again, Emily, thank you so much for that overview. I also read that Bowdoin has been test optional since 1969. So Emily, what are your thoughts on the increase of schools going test optional? And where do you see the test optional movement going over the next few years? Perhaps there's something that we can all learn from Bowdoin's philosophy being test optional since 1969. Any thoughts you want to share, Emily?
Yeah, sure. I'm glad you asked this question. And you're absolutely right. Bowdoin actually was the first college in the country to become test optional back in 1969. I think every college has to make it, or university has to make a decision for themselves about what policies work for them and what their philosophy and approach will be. I will say, though, for us, we've been doing this work. We've been admitting fabulous, wonderful students, educating and graduating those students onto incredible careers and lives of impact for decades. And we know that we can do it well with or without test scores. So the choice is really up to a student. If a student wishes to submit a test score, they can. We'll look at it. And if they don't or choose not to, for whatever reason, they haven't taken a test or they don't think their test score reflects their abilities, that's absolutely fine as well. I think the next few years will be interesting. I can't predict the future. I don't have a crystal ball. Certainly, I wish I had maybe a few years ago. I think we all probably would have. Things we don't know that are coming down the pike, whether it's in the higher education landscape, whether it's in the world, what happens in the world. But I do think that you'll see probably some schools return to testing, but others probably following in the footsteps of places like Bowdoin. I'm incredibly grateful for the admissions leadership several decades ago who made this very bold move and have really led the way for other institutions to see that this is absolutely possible depending on the college or university. For us, we know it works, and it's part of our philosophy and has been for many years.
Well, that is so interesting. Thank you so much for sharing, Emily. And I was also curious, although you have been test optional since 1969, can you share how many students in your first year class didn't submit test scores?
Sure. So this year's first year class, about 46% of students applied and were admitted test optional. It ranges year to year, but it's probably not far off that most years. So it's nearly half of our students have test scores and nearly half don't.
Hey, John, this is Grace from the University of Florida. What I love most about Dormify is that their products are truly made with college in mind. My absolute favorite product I purchased was the charging headboard. Having the extra charger in my dorm room, which already had super limited spots to plug in, was a game changer. It is functional and seriously cute and trendy. I can't recommend it enough. Thanks so much for listening, everyone.
Thank you, Grace, for sharing your thoughts on Dormify. For those of you listening, be sure to check out our show notes where you could find our Dormify affiliate link and our most updated coupon code where you can save 15% on most Dormify products. As a reminder, our podcast does receive a small commission for purchases made through our affiliate link, but rest assured, we only promote products that we believe in and feel would benefit you, our listeners. Thank you and best wishes to all. Well, we appreciate that insight. Thank you so much, Emily. And let's talk a little bit about the application process. So, how many applications do you review a year? And do you review applications by region, intended major, or even high school? Any insight that you could give us into the application review process would be greatly appreciated, as students and their parents are always interested in knowing what happens once they hit the submit button.
Of course. So this year we received more than 10,000 applications. Wow. Our final application numbers obviously will be released sometime in the future as we finish out the cycle. But we've received more than 10,000 applications this year. And every application is reviewed in an individual manner by an admissions officer and another perspective on that application as well. And it's really important to us that our admissions staff take the time to carefully, thoughtfully look at the materials that a student submits. So that's their application, their transcript, hopefully the school counselor is submitting that, not the student, just to be clear, but the school transcript, letters of recommendation, any additional materials, if a student chooses to submit testing, the writing sample that is in their application as well. All of these different pieces are reviewed as part of our process. So students and families may have heard the phrase holistic review or holistic admissions before. Certainly that's applicable to the work we do here at Bowdoin. And I would also say, you know, it's a very individual process. We generally start with the transcript because a student's academic preparation and performance are going to be key to our understanding of a student's potential for success at Bowdoin. We know that different students in different high schools offer different things. Some schools offer advanced placement coursework. Others might have international baccalaureate or dual enrollment or offer none of these or all of them as choices. Or something perhaps entirely different. So we don't have a very particular set of expected courses, for example, in terms of a specific class. But what we are hoping to see are students who are taking a broad range of courses, rigorous courses within the context of what's available to them at a high school over their 4 years. Most students are taking things like 4 years of English or language arts, social studies or history, science coursework, mathematics, and several years of a language other than English. And again, which exact courses students take are going to vary depending on the high school that a student attends, but we want to see where a student has had choice to pursue different coursework, what classes have they elected to take, and then also, of course, of importance, how have they done in those courses? And it's not just the grade on the transcript, although that's important. It's what do others in the student's orbit say about them? So we ask for a letter of recommendation from a school counselor, as well as a letter of recommendation from a teacher. And then we also, and this is something we started doing a while back, we also allow students the opportunity to submit an additional letter of recommendation, that second letter of recommendation. But instead of requiring it to be from a teacher, we say, anyone in your orbit as a young person who can offer an important insight on who you are. For many students, it might be another teacher because other colleges they're applying to require 2 teacher X. But for some, it might be an entirely different adult. So it could be a coach, an internship supervisor, a club advisor or mentor, a supervisor at a job, it could be a clergy person, any number of people in a student's orbit who can speak to what kind of person might this student be on our campus community. So we care a lot about what these perspectives add in terms of a student and their preparation for a place like Bowdoin, because Bowdoin is hard. It's challenging, but we want to make sure that students are going to be prepared to really thrive here and be successful at Bowdoin. And then also we spend a lot of time thinking about what kind of person is this going to be in our residence halls. You know, all first-year students live together on our campus. Most students live on campus all 4 years. If they choose to do so, they absolutely can. It's not required though, but all first-year students do live on campus together. And so we think, what kind of roommate is this person going to be? How are they going to be in classes in our small classes that are often discussion-based or seminars? What are they going to be like in student life? So these are all questions we're thinking about as we're reviewing an application. And then, of course, the things that are really important to us to keep in mind, as I mentioned earlier, different high schools offer different things. So the context a student's coming from, not just their high school context, but their community, that's important for us to understand as well. So we spend a lot of time. In fact, we are in the thick of that process right now and reviewing applications and trying to understand students as best we can. And actually from that approach, we started doing a few different things over the past few years that I think seek to give students voice in this process. So I mentioned allowing students to select their second letter of recommendation author. It doesn't have to be a teacher. But something else we added is a video response. And it's entirely optional, but we give students the chance after they've applied to the college to sign into their student portal and to answer a spontaneous prompt. There's no right or wrong answer. Students have 2 minutes to respond. These are not gotcha questions. They're just open-ended dialogue conversation. I'll give you an example in a moment that enable us as the admissions committee to get to know students better. So it might be something like, you had a free afternoon to do anything. What would you do? Or what's something you really admire about your high school? What's something you really enjoy about your school? Just an open-ended question that we hope allows students to have more space in their application to share themselves with us. That's something that's really important. So those are all some of the different pieces that we're thinking about and looking at in the admissions committee as we are going through and making the really tough decisions of who we are able to admit and bring to the campus.
Well, I really appreciate that very thorough overview. Thank you so much. A couple of things that I just want to review. You talked about looking at how the student performed based on the high school that they attended. As you mentioned, some schools offer AP or IB and dual enrollment. Some schools offer all of them. Some offer none of them. So it's in the context of the high school that you're coming from, students. Very important that you show that you built ramps, that you challenge yourself over the 4 years. That's obviously something at Bowdoin that they look at. I also appreciate that you talked about the second letter, because we always talk about how every piece of the application should build on the next. So what I appreciate is that the second letter, you're okay with it being from a coach, perhaps somebody from the clergy, perhaps a supervisor at a job, or if the student decides, a second teacher. But again, keeping in mind, trying to build on each part of the overall application. The video response, I know you said it's optional. I think that's terrific as well, because if you have a great personality, students, and perhaps you're better in person than you are behind the computer screen writing an essay, you should take advantage of that opportunity to get in front of a camera and show off your personality. Again, keeping in mind that each part of your overall application builds on the next. So again, Emily, thank you so much for that comprehensive answer. I really appreciate it. And I think there's a lot of good pearls for students and their parents there. I know you mentioned it earlier, Emily, but what is the percentage of your students that apply from in-state or out-of-state, and does the application process differ for each? If so, please explain.
Yeah, this is a great question. So most students at Bowdoin are from outside of the state of Maine. We embrace Maine. We love being in Maine, but most students are not from Maine. About 9% of our student body are students from Maine. The other 91% come from all over the country and many other countries as well. And so there are 14 states in our first year class with more than 10 students. Keep in mind, our first year class is a little more than 500 students. And those include places like California, Florida, New York, New Jersey, Texas. There's a whole list. All this information is actually on our website. If this is something that you're interested in learning more about, I encourage you to go and check it out. But most students at Bowdoin are not from Maine. I will say, though, I think many students who come to Bowdoin, I would say probably all actually, really learn how much Maine is important to our identity as a college, but also the college experience here, and really embrace and love what Maine offers. So we don't have different processes for applicants who are in-state versus out-state. We have one tuition rate, so there's no change in tuition. We are a private institution, so we don't have an in-state tuition, for example. And we look at applications and make admissions decisions in the same manner, whether a student is from Maine or from another state or country.
Well, thank you so much for all of that, Emily. I really appreciate it. And I wanted to mention that I always add the Office of Undergraduate Admissions link in the show notes, in this case, obviously, for Bowdoin College. If there are any other links that you want to share with students and their parents, please send them to me and I'll make them available in the show notes. So what is the average profile of the current freshman class in terms of GPA and any other related data that you collect? And if a student falls below your mid 50% range, what are some of the things that they can do to enhance their overall application?
Sure. So students applying to Bowdoin come from all different kinds of high schools, as we mentioned earlier, and they attend schools with all different kinds of grading practices. Some schools weight courses, others don't. Some calculate a GPA. It might be on a 100-point scale. It could be letter grades. You name it. We know it's different. So we actually don't recalculate a GPA, and I don't have an average GPA for our student body as a result, because everyone's GPA is slightly different. But most students at Bowdoin are succeeding. They're getting mostly A's in rigorous courses available at their high school, often the most rigorous. That doesn't mean that a student feels or should feel they have to take every single most rigorous class in every single department at their high school. I want to make that clear as well. We want students to embrace what it means to be a high school student and to learn and grow. And sometimes that means different things for different students. So I just want to throw that out there. But I think what's important for students in thinking about a place like Bowdoin, and certainly for us here, is how do I present and share with the admissions committee the things that are most important to me as an applicant in this process, where I have the space to provide my perspective, my hopes, my dreams, my interests, where can I and should I do that in the application process? When a student's applying in their senior year of high school, many of the pieces of their application are already set. So a 12th grader can't go back and change, at least I haven't heard of how, their ninth grade transcript, right? Or what they were engaged in terms of student life in 10th grade. And just to throw out there, we also know things like COVID-19 have had a tremendous impact on the experiences and opportunities and challenges and limitations that students have faced in the past 2 years. So you are imagining, or if you are a 12th grade student, there are some places that are out of your control in this process at this point. But there are many places where you have a lot of room to really share yourself with the admissions committee and put your own voice into this process. And that, I think, is my best advice for students who are wondering, depending on their profile and what a school they're looking at, the profile of that institution, what is a tip or idea for how to best present oneself in that process. I would say really embracing the places where you as a high school student, whether that's through an essay, we have an optional response, the video response we mentioned earlier. For us here at Bowdoin, we try to create these spaces that you can share yourself with us.
Well, that's really thoughtful insight. Thank you so much, Emily. And going back to the overall application process, I was curious, with the increase in schools going test optional, and of course the ease with which one can apply thanks to things like the Common App, schools are receiving far more applications than ever before. You indicated that your first year class is 500, and yet you received over 10,000 applications, just as an example. So as admissions professionals, How do you determine the number of applicants to accept, waitlist, and even deny when obviously you receive far more applications from deserving candidates than your seats available?
This is one of the most difficult parts of my job. It's not the math of figuring out how many students to offer admissions to. It's knowing that we unfortunately are going to be unable to offer admission to all of the wonderful applicants out there. And I really do think that admissions professionals at all different kinds of colleges and universities, this is one of the areas for those of us who work at highly selective places, that's the most challenging, is that we know there are wonderful, fantastic young people that we are unfortunately not able to admit to our class because, for example, our first year class is about 500 students. And so I would say, first off, I hope all of the students and families who are listening to this know that an admissions decision is not a referendum on who you are as a person or who your child's success or who they are as a person, if you're a parent or family member listening to this. And so just keep that in mind, a little bit of advice thrown in here, but very true. So we look to see about how many students take us up on the offer to come each year from our admitted student class. You might hear this referred to as yield in the admissions profession, and use that to guide how many students we anticipate we should be admitting each year, because it's so important that we are a highly residential experience and campus. It's really important that we don't have too many students, we don't over-enroll, but we get as close as possible to that roughly 500 student count, because all of our first-year students live together on campus. They're in first-year seminars of, you know, 12 to 15 students, even fewer than that, depending on the class. So we have to be very thoughtful in that process. But you're absolutely right. I think, you know, the challenging part on the admissions side is knowing how many wonderful people out there we're not going to be able to admit each year.
Well, we appreciate that response, Emily. Thank you so much. Again, you were so thorough. And obviously, anything that's worthwhile is not easy. And certainly, the college admissions process is not something that's easy. In fact, very difficult when you have so many applications from deserving students and limited seats. So again, we really appreciate the insight. Thank you so much. And so if a student visits Bowdoin, what are some of the sites that they absolutely must visit? And what are some examples of questions they should ask to help them determine whether or not Bowdoin is the right fit for them?
Well, let me just start by saying sometimes I get asked the question, when's a great time to visit Maine? When's a great time to visit Bowdoin? And my answer to that is anytime. It's true. We are a place that embraces four seasons. We have a gorgeous fall, a really refreshing and fun winter, spring, the plant life is coming back, the snow is melting, and then summertime. You know, there's a reason that Maine has a slogan that we are the place or the way that life should be. And that is, you know, nothing like a Maine summer. So always a good time to visit. And students can learn more information about the logistics of scheduling a visit to Bowdoin on our website. Easy to sign up for any sort of program that we might offer, both on campus, but also virtual, might I add. I think when students and families are on campus, some places that I would encourage them to explore. Part of our student-led tour goes through this area, but our main quad really helps situate students to the experience of a Bowdoin education. All of our first-year students come together during their orientation period, and we have a convocation near our art museum. And it's really the kickoff to the school experience here. And then that's also where graduation is held. So there's this nice sort of opening and closing to the experience, and the tour will go right back by the art museum steps. The art museum itself, by the way, is also incredible. It's worth its own visit, independent of visiting the college or admissions. But I think it represents so much about many of the traditions that a student will find here on campus and the community that they will find. Many of our buildings on campus reflect the opportunities a student will find here. So we have a beautiful building that houses our environmental studies program. The Rue Building, it reflects, I think, the commitment the college has to sustainability and being a leader in considering the needs of our planet, but also in environmental studies and the study of the environment. We even have off campus, it's a little bit of a drive, one quite more so than the other, that students can take advantage of if it comes to the study of the environment, marine studies, Arctic studies, the study of the coast, all areas of opportunity for exploration for students, where our faculty are doing incredible work. So the Schiller Coastal Studies Center is about a 15-minute drive from campus, and it is gorgeous. It's on a place called Oars Island. There are over 100 different acres of forests and meadows right overlooking the Atlantic Ocean. It's just breathtaking. Yes, I'm biased, but it is truly gorgeous. It's over, I think it's something like 2.5 miles of coastline with trails, but also academic buildings, laboratories, research space. And it's a great place to go as a student, whether you're interested in doing really great research with a professor one-on-one, or maybe you want to learn how to sail. Maybe you're just interested in going out there to work on a creative writing project and get some inspiration from the natural world. Wherever and whatever your relationship may be to coastal studies, the Schiller Coastal Studies Center is a great place to check out. So someone visiting our campus, whether or not that's an academic area of interest, I would absolutely suggest that. Further afield, and by further afield, I mean it would take someone over a day of travel involving ferries and, and boats and driving and an international border. But I still feel like I should mention it just because is our Kent Island Station. And that is a island in the Bay of Fundy that the college owns, technically in Canada, I suppose, where students and faculty and artists do research in the environment and the natural world in the summertime. I have yet to make it up there, but I hear it is incredible. And I think it also represents, again, the leadership of the college, particularly in these areas of study. But getting back to that idea of the common good I talked about earlier, the notion that the college exists for the broader world, and that our students, faculty, staff, and alumni embrace that as well.
Well, that's a terrific overview. And, you know, you made me remember when my daughters were younger, my wife and I and our daughters would go up quite a few times to Maine. And the natural beauty there is just stunning, second to none. So people out there, if you haven't been to Maine, it's worth the visit. Thank you so much, Emily, for that overview. I did have one other question related to your application process, and it's about the essay. What are some examples of college essays that really stuck with you? And what advice would you share with prospective students in terms of what to think about as they sit down getting ready to write their essay?
I think one of the things that can create a lot of anxiety for high school students going through the college admissions process is the college essay. And so some of the most compelling essays that I've read over the years, and I've worked in admissions for 17 years now for a number of different colleges and universities. So this is a range of questions that these essays were written in response to. But some of the most compelling are on the most mundane topics. I think part of why the college essay process can be stressful for young people. And I want to be clear, it's not stressful for everyone. So if you are a high school student going through this process, listening to this podcast, and it is not stressful for you, that is great. You should not feel that you must be stressed. But I think, you know, part of that anxiety for some is around how do I identify the topic that is of the significance of this transition in my life. And so I would encourage applicants to consider that often the day-to-day pieces of your experience can make really great topics. So your commute to school in the morning could be really insightful into your interests and who you are as a young person. How you spend your time on weekends could give you insight into something that you want to mention. Someone who's had a really important impact on your life, whether it's a family member, a teacher, a friend, whatever the context might be, that might be a place to start thinking about how does this reveal something about who I am as a person. So the first sort of advice I would say is to get away from the notion that the topic has to be grandiose in some way. It's okay if it is. There are some students, and it is, and that is totally okay. But many of the most compelling essays I've read are about the day-to-day. They're about cooking dinner with a parent. They're about something someone's learned from a sibling. They're about a book someone read that changed the way they think about a lot of things in their lives. A family pet. A favorite color. Ways that someone likes to spend their time in their summer. You know, all sorts of different sort of day-to-day experiences, because those things can reveal a lot about who you are as a young person. So first piece of advice, write about something that is authentic, true, and to your own experience. The second piece I would say is really thinking about, is this essay about me? So I just spent several minutes harping on the point of, you know, writing about something that is as close to home, figuratively, potentially, literally. If you're writing about a person, make sure that you, the author, don't get lost in there. I've read some incredible essays about family members, for example. Those family members weren't the ones applying to college, right? It was the high school student. So if you're a high school student going through this, make sure that your essay says something about you. And, you know, I think that it's okay to be funny if you are a funny person. If you're not a funny person, then maybe avoid humor. It might not be your right best bet. I would also say writing in your natural but professional voice is probably a good piece of advice. Have someone read your application. So make sure that others are giving you perspectives and ideas on what you're writing, but also things like, you know, spell check is not going to catch a correctly spelled word that is not the word you intended to insert in your essay, but things like spell check. So I think these are the pieces of advice. But I would also say, know when to let it go to bed, basically, so to speak. So know when you've done your due diligence, you've done your process, you've written something, you've edited it, you've had a chance to reflect on it, it speaks to you, it represents you in some way, you feel good about it, then let it go, hit submit on that application, and know that you've done your best work. That's what's important.
Well, that was a very thorough, comprehensive answer with great advice for students. I love how you talked about if your essay is grandiose, fantastic, but it doesn't have to be. You gave great examples of different essays, including a commute to school, someone who had an impact on you, cooking dinner with a parent, a book, a pet, and so much more. Emily, that was terrific. But I also appreciate how you talked about not forgetting how to reflect on it, students. How did it shape you? How did it impact you? Because there have been conversations with reps in the past where, for example, someone writes about a grandparent and the rep wants to admit the grandparent to college, but they didn't learn anything new about the student. So that's also a very important piece which you covered. And again, Emily, that was an awesome answer. And this was a phenomenal conversation. Unfortunately, Emily, it leads us to the last question, which is, what are your top three pieces of advice that you would provide a student and their parents getting ready for the college admissions process?
It's been a great conversation. And I just want to say again, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad we were able to talk about this time that I think is really important and central to a lot of high school students' experiences and family members and parents out there. So my number one piece of advice for high school students and their families going through the college admissions process is to make sure to make time for non-college admissions things. This is probably counterintuitive. We're talking about the college admissions process. You're listening to a podcast at the moment about the college admissions process, and I'm telling you to go listen to a podcast about something else or spend your time doing something else. But I mean it. I think sometimes the college admissions process becomes the focal point of a student or family's world. And I understand how and why that happens, but I think it's really important to keep some perspective on that and as much as possible, not let the topic, the experience of applying to college become how a family or a student and parents or others spend all of their time. Talk about other things, do other things. If you're visiting colleges in person, make time to go do other non-college admissions related things on those trips. And what those things are is going to entirely depend on you, the student, or you, the parent, your child's interests. Maybe it is checking out a ballpark in the town that you're in that, of a sports team, or eating at a restaurant of a kind of cuisine you've always wanted to try, or seeing something in the natural world, or visiting a museum or amusement park, whatever it might be. But be sure to make time, literally and figuratively, for things other than college admissions during this process, because I think sometimes it can become the focal point of the time spent together. And you want to make sure that you create that time, because my second piece of advice is everything's going to work out. I firmly believe that for every student. There are, is it more than 3,000, 4,000 different colleges and universities? You probably know the answer better than I.
It's somewhere in the 4,000 range, yes.
Yeah. There are institutions for all different kinds of students. There are vocational programs. There are apprenticeships. There's all different kinds of ways that students can work towards meaningful careers that are you know, satisfying to themselves and support themselves in the future. For some students, it might be a college university. For others, it might look like a different path. But no matter what a student is headed towards, I firmly believe it's going to work out. And so keeping that optimism and faith in the process is, I think, really important. And lastly, this is not something that I came up with this phrase. It was someone who worked in admissions a few decades ago, but sort of this notion that college admissions is not about at the end of the day, the acceptances or the rejections that a student receives, that it's not about sort of collecting acceptances for a bumper sticker or something to that effect, right? I'm not being as articulate as the original author of that quotation, but I think the big takeaway is this process will be challenging. It will have its ups and downs. As a student, you may feel overjoyed at times, frustrated or sad or disappointed at others, but know that people around you have great faith and confidence in you. And families know that your child is going to go on to great things that are right for them and find their place. And that there are lots of great resources out there, whether it is a student school, others in their community. There are many different people who are here to embrace and support you on this journey and this experience, and just to have confidence that in the end, it's all gonna be okay.
Well, that was a very thoughtful and thorough, comprehensive answer. Emily, I cannot thank you enough for being with us today. I really appreciate your time and your insight. I do hope to have you again. And I have to say, I'm so happy, as I know that this podcast episode is going to help so many students and their parents. So we really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much, Emily.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP.
I want to welcome back Sean Patel, who's the CEO and founder of Prep Expert. Sean, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, John. Just wanted to do a quick shout out for an amazing deal that we have for College Admissions Process podcast listeners. We're offering 30% off all Prep Expert SAT and ACT courses and tutoring. It's live online. We've got the best score improvement guarantees in the industry. You'll get taught by 99th percentile instructors. And you can save 30% off when you go to the show notes of the College Admissions Process podcast, grab your discount code for 30% off, and click the link in the show notes.
Thank you, Sean. So great to have you again. And to everyone out there, please note that if you make a purchase through any of our affiliate links, the podcast gets a commission. But rest assured that we would only promote products that we believe in and feel would benefit our listeners. Thank you all, and best wishes.